It's No Crumbs Left, and I'm back from the book tour, picking up the podcast. Wanted to start it off with one of my favorite Chicago businesses and badass superwoman, Lori Andre. Hi, Lori.
Terry, you always refer to me as badass, and I can't quite figure out why.
Well, it's like you're a woman. You've been doing your thing a long time. You're a trendsetter. You are a worker. You're a doer. And you just are out there making it happen with all kinds of things going on. And you've been doing it for a long time. And I, you know, have been a customer of yours for years and years and years and years. And I admire you. So I just love that, you know, we're of similar age. And I like that we're out there defying the odds, doing our thing.
Yeah. I think, it's something to be really proud of.
Yep. So tell me, you are the owner of Lori's Shoes.
That is correct.
Yeah. I mean, among other things, that you're.
But I'm a mother, sister, business owner.
I love it. But I have been a customer. I almost exclusively have gotten my shoes from you. I mean, occasionally I'll cheat and go to Barney's and get something. But I would say like 95% of my shoes the last over 20 years have been from your shop.
Well, I appreciate that.
I love your store. So tell me about your beginnings. How did that happen? Is this your first love?
Well, actually, shoes definitely is a love of mine, but food is also a love of mine as well. So there's something that we obviously have in common there. And so when I first started out thinking that I wanted to become an entrepreneur and open up a business, my first thought was really to do something related to food. And at the time in the early 80s, it's when the Silver Palette was coming into play in New York City and the cookbook was out and I was newly married and I just loved to cook throughout my entire youth and teen and adult years. And I thought, okay, well, I'm going to open up a gourmet takeout just like the Silver Palette. And so actually we rented the space on Armitage back in 1983, not really knowing at the time what I was going to do. I had all intention of opening up a gourmet food takeout. And then as I began my research, a few weeks later, I was talked out of it, actually, by a number of people because, number one, you can't make money.
Right.
You have to deal with, you know, the city and the health department. And I said, well, okay, well, I love food. I can keep that as a passion and a hobby, but I also love shoes. So I'll open up a shoe store instead. And that's really how it all started, finding the space. I had been married recently. My husband was in law school. And I thought, okay, well, you know, I've got a lot of years to work, so let me take the risk now. And my parents were both entrepreneurs, and they said, go for it. So that's what I did. I hung a sign in the window. It said Lori Shoes, and that was 37 years ago.
Wow. And how many different places and trends and whatever has – I mean, I can't. That's mind-boggling.
Yeah. Well, the thing that's interesting about trend is that they keep repeating themselves. There was just like a different interpretation of it, you know. So I always say, like, okay, we've seen the trend, like cowboy boots back in the 90s. But the young girls today who are teens or in their early 20s, they didn't see the trend yet. So it has to repeat. You can't keep – you know, inventing new trends, but you have to sort of reinvent trends that have already happened in the past. And it's just a little bit of a different interpretation.
And do you have, I mean, just to keep it current and have all ages, do you have all ages that are working at the shop?
Well, we do. I have to say, though, we're in a unique situation where we have a lot of people that have worked for us actually since I started my business and then have worked with me, you know, for decades. But we do have younger generations. It's actually maybe daughters of people that worked for us before that, or it's daughters of customers who've shopped with us over the years. So we do tend to have sort of a mix of all different generations.
What I like is that, and I don't know how you do that, but it's like you've got, there's lots of shoes, and I like how they're set up sort of in piles so nobody goes in the back to get it. You know, there's a very neatly set up, a beautiful boxes with the shoe on top,
right,
so that it's, you can definitely, people help you, but you can also look and see, you know, I mean, I always hated that, like waiting for the shoe person to go in the back.
It's so much pressure, right.
Yeah, so it's really, and that you have so many different shoes, but the shoes are really very reasonable. How do you guys do that? And you seem to have different things. Like I see things with you guys that I don't see elsewhere.
Right. So I think one, you know, is that I just have an eye for certain product. And what we try to do really is distinguish ourselves from everybody else that's out there that are selling shoes. Because I feel like the only way we're going to not only attract new customers but retain old ones is if we have different product that is more unique and more attainable in terms of price point and really offer something that you can't find anywhere else. So I think that's what keeps people coming back, and that's sort of what drives me is, you know, it's not only the product but it's the customers too, because I know that they can come to our store and expect something different that they might not find anywhere else, and are confident enough to try it.
Right. And how do you, I mean, I think that when I see you, you're always like, you seem very inspired, and I admire that about you. How do you keep it fresh after 37 years?
Well, I always tell people I have never woken up in the morning and said to myself, ugh, I don't want to go to work today, because I really love what I do. I love the product. I love the people. And I like that interaction that I have on a daily basis, getting to know people, getting to know our customers, because I really feel like those people, our customers, are really our best educators. And I've just always been a people person, and I just happen to have a good eye for fashion and for trend and for product. And it's something that really drives me every day. So that's really how I keep it fresh, just by being inspired by everything around me.
Yeah, I love that. I feel the same way. I mean, I haven't been doing, I mean, in a sense, I've been doing food for 37 years because I've been doing all kinds of different things in the food business. And, you know, I'm a passionate cook. I love to cook. And people always ask me, like, how do you have that much energy? But it's because I like what I'm doing and I'm excited about it. I'm excited about life. You know, I mean, it's like this morning I was at the farmer's market at 7 o'clock. We were working on a shoot. It was like I had things to get. By the time I got back to the office, it's 8 o'clock. No one's even at the office yet. And I've, you know, done it all and getting ready for the shoot. So I think loving what you do. And I think we're lucky enough to have passion in something that is our career. But I think the thing is you find something you're passionate about, even if it isn't your career, something that gets your day going. You know, we're here for a short period of time.
Right.
You know, it's like no excuses. Take a hold of life, grab it by all it's got, and find a niche for yourself that is something that really drives you.
Yeah. No, I feel driven every day with my business. I can't wait for the next season. I can't wait to unpack boxes. I can't wait to call customers. I can't wait to see things on people's feed. And then I also look really forward to the interaction that I have with people as well.
How much time do you spend on the floor?
So I'm usually, well, I say that I work 5 days a week, but it's really when you own your own business, you know, it's 7 days a week, more or less. But I'm typically on the floor every single day. I might not be there all day, but I'm typically there at least 5 to 6 hours a day.
Makes a difference. My friend Mylee Teal says, like, you know, how did she succeed? She was willing to do it longer and harder, you know, and everybody else gave up. You know, she just was really willing to do that. And I love that. And I think that is, I don't mind the grind. I get in there and I can, you know, usually outlast everybody.
Yeah. And I think it's also that I love a challenge.
Yes.
And I don't back down easily. And people often in our industry call me a real bulldog because I feel like if I want something, I'm going to get it.
Yeah. Why is that? I definitely have that for me too. And why is that when a woman is doing that, it's somehow a negative or something, whereas for a man, it's like a positive.
Right. I mean, I guess sometimes people just don't expect it from women. I've always been like that. No one has like trained me. I think it's like sort of an innate personality type that we have, a trait that we have that it's just how we move in life. It's how we just go at things, whether it's a challenge, you know, we're faced with some diversity, whatever it is. We just forge ahead.
Right. And it takes some grit.
It does.
And it takes some stuff to make it happen.
And sacrifices, too.
Yes. So along the way, you've had that going on. Plus, I know you're a mother. Is it three boys?
I am a mother of three boys.
Isn't this ironic? A shoe store and you're a mother of three boys.
I know. I always say, but I have three amazing daughter-in-law, so at least they can wear the shoes.
I love it.
But yeah, it saved me a lot of money, though, over the years, because all they'd wear was, you know, sneakers and Gap sweatpants.
Yeah. So what are some discoveries just in terms of, you know, young people getting into business? Women that look to us to say, well, what can you tell me? What have you discovered that has allowed you to support this journey for yourself?
Well, I think, first of all, I think life is really about balance. And I think, you know, you have to sort of prioritize what is important to you in your life. And, you know, having three children obviously is the most important thing. But I think also having a real sense of your own self and being able to make your own decisions and whether they're good decisions or bad decisions. But if they're bad, you can react, you can change them. And if they're good, then you move forward with those decisions. So I think it's really being able to, you know, embrace all those challenges and being able to, again, find the balance and work out your priorities and move forward in that way.
And what kind of risks, you know, have you taken? Speak a little bit to sort of your ability or your interest, you know, to take risks.
Sure. So I think for anybody in business, you always have to evolve. And I think you always have to look sort of toward the future to see, to be able not only to be proactive, but to be reactive. So just to give you an example, I'll use 2008 during the recession. Nobody really had planned for that. It sort of took us all by surprise. But I think it was at that point, you know, we were able as a small business owner to react very quickly. So if that meant, you know, looking at how we buy our product, canceling orders, working with vendors to give us dating, whatever it was that we felt that in order for us to survive during that time and afford to be able to lose the sales, that we could still be able to move forward and continue to do business. So making a lot of changes, you know, we cut people's hours. We had to, people, our staff had to take a reduction in salary. So we worked it out and we always said to them, look, we have to do this now, but we know as we move towards the future, we're going to be able to make it better for you.
Right.
So I think that's part of it.
And I think risk-taking is part of it. You know, I know that it's like, and making decisions in real time like you did.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we do at No Crumbs Left also, is just all of the time we're reacting and we're willing to try things. And we don't get, you know, people get very locked in our business into like how many likes and how many comments. And
Yeah. It
can keep you from being on your edge because you want to be safe rather than saying, I'm going to put it all out there.
Yeah.
I'm going to experiment. I'm going to try new things, and I'm not going to worry about that. And if what we need to do is make it right for a client because we need to do something additional, that's what we'll do. But we have to be willing to not be fear-based, and we have to be willing to risk.
Well, in our business, for sure, we have to be willing to risk because we're going to the market. We're picking out product. That's a risk right there because we don't know if the consumer is going to like it. And I think also, again, going back to what I said about evolving in your business is that, so, you know, for us, we've opened up stores over the years. In 1999, we became e-commerce when no one else was really doing that. We started going to Europe in the mid to late 90s to bring product in. So along the way, we're always changing and doing and trying new things and taking those risks, bringing in product that, you know, we know could be a little too ahead of our times. But you have to be able to have sort of the wherewithal and the ability to take that risk and to withstand that it might be a failure. But
right.
You don't know unless you try.
And as the owner of the business, I mean, let's face it, the buck stops with you and I.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. You're the one making the decision and you can get some
a little
good
stressful.
Counsel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And have your sons, I know that, you know, from coming in that one or more son have worked for you. So what's that been like?
So, well, we consider ourselves a family business. I've worked with my husband for the last 37 years. He never became a lawyer, even though he passed the bar. But once our business took off, he was like, well, what should I do? And I'm like, I don't want you working 70 hours a week. I want you to work with me. So he never practiced law. So he came into business with me. And, you know, over the years, you know, my sons have always worked in the store doing stock work or whatever, but through school and college or whatnot. But after my middle son had graduated college and was in the workforce, he was a teacher, he decided, you know, after a few years, he's like, yeah, you know, I love what you and Dad are doing and I really respect you in what you've accomplished and I'd love to come into your business. And I was like, okay. So our middle son, Elliot, came into our business for a few years. And then after a while, he really felt as though shoes was not his passion.
Right,
and he wanted
right.
to pursue something else. So he went on to school and to become a therapist. And then a few years ago, my youngest son, who's now 27 years old, had graduated from Parsons School of Design and actually fashion design and particularly shoe design, and had been working in the industry for a couple years in Italy and then in New York. And then he decided that he wanted to, you know, see if he could make a go at it, use his business acumen as well as his creativity. And so he's been with us now for a couple of years, and he definitely has embraced it, and he's going to carry it forward.
I love it. Well, there's nothing better than that.
It's the best, having a child working right beside you.
So life is good and a lot of good stuff going on.
Yeah.
So tell me, fast forward to today, how ALS has touched your life. Tell me that story.
So in the fall of 2016, my husband, Brian, at the time was 58 years old, was diagnosed with ALS. And as you can probably imagine, at that point, our lives sort of stood still. Because when you're given a diagnosis of ALS, basically they say to you, you have 2 to 5 years to live, get your finances in order, get your life together, and make sure you have good support around you. So immediately you sort of, you know, go into survival mode and think, okay, what do I need to do? How much time do I have? Realizing that, as you've mentioned before, you know, you're only on this planet for a certain period of time. So how do you want to live your days? And we really took that to heart, and we started doing a lot of research to see what was available out there for Brian, and in terms of therapies and trials and whatnot. And at that point, you know, full steam ahead, I sort of just went into this research mode and discovered who the best researchers are, who the best physicians are. We did a worldwide tour, a nationwide tour, visiting Cedars-Sinai, going to Johns Hopkins, Mayo Clinic, Mass General, to really find a physician who can advocate for us, who was not only a physician but also a researcher. And then we just, one thing led to another. Brian started on a number of different treatments, but through the whole course, we find that we're part of this ALS community, which is amazing, because ALS can feel like a very isolated type of disease because it is a rare disease, and that people, you know, there's only 30,000 people today who are living with the disease. So we've become part of this community where we find support not only, you know, for resources, but also just general support in terms of having a group of people that we can, you know, talk with, speak with their experiences, what we need to do next throughout the whole process. So it's really important for us to be part of something like that. And I'm happy to say my husband is doing really well.
So how long has he had the diagnosis for?
So he was diagnosed in 2016. So October of 2019 will be 3 years. However, he's been symptomatic for like 5 years, which is very common with patients with ALS. And oftentimes the diagnosis goes sort of mistreated or undiagnosed because most people who start with the disease start with a certain amount of weakness. And it could be a weakness in your hand, or it could be in your shoulder, or it could be your left foot, whatever. And you go to see a neurologist, and the neurologist says, yeah, let's do an MRI. And the MRI comes back and they say, well, you have a little impingement in like C2 and 3, but I'll send you to a neurosurgeon. They can fix it. And which is exactly what happened with my husband. And he was like, ugh, I'm not going under the knife. And it wasn't until a couple years later that he started feeling weakness in his left leg. And it was at that point I said, you need to get that checked out. And we did go see a neurologist, and they did a test, which is called an EMG, which is a nervation test, to see how your muscles react to your nerve stimulation. And it was at that point in October of 2016 where the news came back and they said, you know, we're sorry, you have this diagnosis. And that's all where it started.
So what, you know, from that day, like, what are those next steps like?
Well, I think it's easy to go online right away and start researching ALS and diseases, other diseases related to ALS, and cures and treatments and forums and communities. And I started to do that, and then I stopped myself from doing it because I really felt that was not really serving me well. If anything, it was making me more sad, more anxious, more worried about like sort of what our future really looked like. So instead, I really sort of shifted my energy and just became very positive and really met other people in the community who I felt were like really aligned with what my goals and initiatives were, was that we needed to find a community which is more patient-centric and patient-driven so that we can then educate and bring awareness to the disease, help raise money for the disease, but in the right manner.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things I admire about you is, you know, I see you, I go in and, you know, we say hello. And I know that you have this thing going on that's really heavy. And yet I'm always like stunned at how present, how you know, joyful you are, you know, and I don't know if joyful is the right word, but I mean, you're like leading your life forcefully in just such a positive going forward motion, you know, and I think I love that. I mean, I just think it's something to be admired. And how do you do that?
Well, I think my husband really inspires me, and he really, every day he truly amazes me, because if you can believe it, he's more worried about me than he is himself. And I think that takes a person that is a very selfless person. So right. I think that he really drives me to be not only an advocate for him, but an advocate for others. So it's not only Brian that drives me, but it's also the ALS community that drives me, which is why I've become so involved in the foundation IAMALS, because we're really doing great things and our initiatives are really good.
Tell us a little bit about your initiatives. I know that I featured you in the Friday Favorites in the spring with an initiative that you were doing. And so people probably would recognize you from there. But tell us about that initiative and other ones that you're involved
right.
in.
Right. So we had May is ALS Awareness Month. So we did the initiative called You Shop, We Give, where we reached out to community businesses and we asked them for 1 week to donate 1% of their sales to IAMALS. But it wasn't only IAMALS. It was the Les Turner Foundation. It was the MDA. And it was the local chapter for ALSA here in Chicago. And we took whatever funds that we raised and we divided a bit equally, because we truly believe that we have to work collaboratively in order to succeed in what our mission is, and that's obviously to find a cure. So IAMALS is a patient-driven, patient-centric organization. We're really providing services in one place, gathering resources from all different organizations across the country that are, you know, supporting, you know, ALS and all other motor neurodegenerative diseases. And basically what we do is we are divided now because our foundation has grown to be so large. We started out with maybe 15 people, that has grown to about 50 people. And so now we have different subcommittees. And so we have a committee that works on legislation. And it's very complicated, but the way clinical trials are set up, for ALS patients, we believe they need to change the protocol for that because, as you know, most clinical trials are double-blinded placebo. And, you know, we feel like, we don't want to be given the placebo because our life here is so short. Yeah. Why not? What do we have to risk? So we're really trying to change the protocol. We're trying to get access to drugs. We're trying to get right to try approval. And so that's part of the work we're doing. The other part is clinical trials. So we're looking at how clinical trials are put together, how you can enroll in a clinical trial, what's the best way of finding out what clinical trial is right for you, and then reporting on some of the data that's found from these clinical trials. And then we have community outreach committee, which I'm part of also, which is amazing because we're doing things like creating a calendar of events. So everybody should know in their community what is going on in the world, you know, of ALS, whether it be fundraisers, whether it be webinars, webcasts, whatever the case is, we want people to be well informed. We want them to be actively participating in what information is out there, because in the end, we really feel it's going to be helpful for them. We're putting together, like community events, for example. We want to have events where there's sort of coffees for people to come in, families who have ALS, bring their children, get their, you know, families involved, so that they also feel part of the community, because we feel we have to grow our community. We have to grow our awareness and educate people. There's a lot of other things that we're doing. It's all great work. We have campaigns that we're running on Twitter, on Instagram, campaigns like Why I Fight. We have a campaign coming up called Who You Fighting For? So we have petitions always going around for the FDA to change their guidance on how clinical trials are done. So we're all working for the same goal in mind, but everybody, you know, with all these different subcommittees, we're all working on different things, but collectively, we're working collaboratively to find a cure.
Well, that's amazing. You're absolutely inspiring. And how does, you know, all of this affect your husband? I mean, what you're doing, he must be so proud of you and just...
Yeah, I think he sort of expected this was what I was going to do.
Expect anything
I know,
less?
I know. So I think that like it's no surprise to him that I'm doing what I'm doing, and I, you know, we've been partners for so long, we've been married for so many years, and we are so symbiotic, and we really work well together. So for us, it's also us coming up with the ideas and working through them together. Mm-hmm. My husband is really, really brilliant, and I always look to him for his ideas, and he's always proofreading and rewriting and editing my work that I do. But I love that about him and that he's willing to do it. And we find real balance with each other. I always say I can't do what he does and he can't do what I do, but we work well together.
Yeah, that's really nice. So speaking of balance, how does one balance this? I mean, so you've got this shoe store and you're breathing, sleeping, you know,
eating it.
And now you have something that it sounds like a full-time job. So it's like how do you balance all of that?
Well, I'm able to do it. I guess I've always been that type of person where, you know, it's like you give a busy person something to do and they get it done. And so I'm really good at managing my time. I'm an early riser, so I get a lot of work done in the morning. But it's really what drives me. I love being busy and I love doing a lot of different things. But I also have certain hobbies. Like before this, I was at my Italian lesson, so I speak Italian. I still have a love of cooking, so I'm cooking all the time. And we love to travel, so we're still traveling a lot. We have a house in Michigan, so we're able to really compartmentalize things well, but still knowing what needs to be done and able to get it done. And I'm not a procrastinator at all.
Me either. So how do you unplug? Or do you? People always ask me, and I'm like, well, I don't really do it very well.
Well, I think I can unplug. I mean, going on vacation, I certainly can unplug. I think when I'm with my family, I unplug. Mm-hmm. I think when we're in our Michigan house, I unplug. When I'm in the kitchen cooking, I find that like that just brings me to a different state of mind. I just love doing that.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, where do people find you? I mean, because I imagine people find you not only because you have the greatest shoe store in Chicago, but, you know, in terms of wanting to be involved in the community. So where do people, the ALS community, where do people find you?
Sure. So if people want to join IAMALS, our foundation, they can go to www.iamals.org. You can join. You can sign up. You can receive information from them. Our co-founder, Brian Wallach, who also has ALS, he was diagnosed at the age of 37, who actually worked in the Obama administration for a number of years, him and his wife. They are really the founders of IAMALS. You can go and read about not only his stories, but other stories of people in the community. You can find out what's going on in the world in terms of like news related to drugs. You can find resources there for people who are in need if you want to connect that way. And so you can do that. You can find a lot of information. We just developed an FAQ for people who are just newly diagnosed. What do they need to know about the disease? Questions that they have. Those are all answered for them in one place. They don't need to look much farther. So it's a great resource for people who are struggling with the disease.
And what about for someone who comes to Chicago or lives in Chicago and just wants fabulous shoes?
Oh, Terry, I like you so much. You can go to Lori Shoes, and we're located at 824 West Armitage in Lincoln Park. And then we have two suburban locations, one in Northfield and one in Highland Park. If you can't get to a brick-and-mortar store, you can visit us at www.lorishoes.com.
Great. And we'll tag so that they can come over and find you. And I'm sure they can direct message you on Instagram or anything like that.
Sure.
Well, this has been a pleasure.
Thank you.
I admire you. And we've been doing sideways play for years and years and years in Chicago. And I'm, you know, crazy about you. And I see the fight that you guys have going here and the way that you're leading it. And it's an example for all of us all
the
time. You are an example of how to make a difference. And I can't say how to make a difference without, you know, tearing up, because I came from a family where making a difference really mattered. So when I see people who make a difference, and then I hear today, like, I'm blown away. So thanks for being a person.
Well, I like to inspire people.
Yes, I love that.
To do good.
So come find Lori. Come find me over at No Crumbs Left. We got a lot of good stuff going on. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you.